on over here, Matthew.
He's a veteran. He's experienced.
He's no dummy.
Let's see what he's learned in the past year.
He wants to get a little airtime. That's good.
Why not? Absolutely. And there we go. And pull that down. Well done.
A little closer.
There you go. There. Perfect. Like, so well done.
Matthew O'Connor here, graduating. Graduating senior and is already kind of in the business. So, Matthew, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you learned, and like I said, he's off on the run, worked for Nick Zito and is ready to roll.
New Yorker, he's but you've been out every year, I think, almost.
Last year was my first year. I was on here with I think it was Nick and no, it was Mitch and Chris Chatters.
Mitch Gerson,
yep.
Sheets.
He's finally gone.
speaking of the 6-year plan.
Yeah, exactly. I think it may have been more than that, but no one's counting. We lost count.
Hammer doesn't know Mitch, but I knew him from the time he was like 12, from his dad. His dad was a derby trailer, and the kid was he basically learned math off a Thorograph. That's his math training. What's changed since last year as you're ready to get out there and work?
Yeah, so over the summer, polished off what I was learning from Nick Zito, have an opportunity, went down to Florida, got my trainer's license, have some stalls at Palmetto. So on the 19th is my last final here, and I'm heading east now from here, down to Boynton Beach, and get started.
Off you go.
Yep, right away.
Tremendous. That's tremendous. Congratulations. Where are the horses coming from?
So I have two from New York that are two-year-olds that will meet me down there, and I have to pick up a couple when I get down there. And then I got some money to spend the summer, bought a nice Air Force Blue filly. Nick Zito picked out a Midnight Loot colt at Keeneland for me. That's coming. So once we get the wheels rolling, I feel it'll all pick up by the summer, hopefully. But baby steps at this point.
Out of this world.
Just get the name out there. Yep.
Brooklyn boys, all Brooklyn boys stuff. Anthony Bonomo. You got a nice connection to Anthony.
Well, the support is great. Yeah. And not just from him, from my dad. I put together a syndicate, a group of guys who put some money up to buy the yearlings.
Outstanding.
New owner from New York, Adirondack Bloodstock. So
excellent.
Here's Matthew here. I mean, it sounds like he could have just decided to go right on into training without, making the move to come to college and come to the University of Arizona. So, why did you think that this was a valuable step on the way to your training career to come here as opposed to just, going on the racetrack, staying on the racetrack and going that way?
Well, you definitely learn a lot on the racetrack, but here when you come to the program, you learn a lot about the business side of it and paramutuals and how basically everything works in track management behind the scenes, and you kind of understand that and develop an appreciation for it. But also just being able to say that you have that degree, I feel, gives you a little forward progression coming out into the industry, because no one wants to give their $1 million horse to someone who just popped up out of nowhere. They see that you're well educated, you understand investments and whatnot, and I guess they respect that to a certain extent, and if they feel more confident in trusting you with their stock.
Well, I can see. I mean, the two guys that we just were just in the room
if
here.
I could follow in their footsteps.
Yeah, but I mean,
yeah, right.
There's nothing wrong with having an education, whatever you do, because now that you have that, you always have that piece of paper in your back pocket and move on. Because the rarity that you go back later. I mean, I ended up going back later, but I'm a rarity in a lot of things. But no, I think you got the right idea, and as we teach some of the classes here and some of the kids go through it and they learn different facets of the industry. It doesn't mean they're going to go into that part of the industry. Like when we teach the racing office part, well, not everybody's going to go in the racing office, but as I tell them as a trainer, it's good to know, the thoughts behind what goes on in the office, how the condition book's written, so you can understand that part of the game. And, when you want to maybe go in and ask a question or two, you're a little bit more informed of what's going on there, and you learn some regulatory stuff, the rules going in, and like you said, the business part, the people part. There's all kinds of the game that rather than just putting a, you know, giving a leg up to a jockey and say, you know, go in the race. So, you know, guys like Matthew, they are going to have a leg up. And it's only natural because they, you know, this experience of just being around other people, being in the school situation, being in those type of situations, it's going to be much more comfortable coming out. And then, of course, he already has the horse background. So it's not like he's now deciding to be a trainer all of a sudden when he's graduated. This is all part of the process. And that's the way it was with Todd and I know Bob along the way and others, Phil D'Amato. I mentioned there's countless guys out there that, that did that.
Chuck Simon.
So the hard work now is going to pay off later, and you hear that, and when you get a little older, you are glad that you went through it.
Well, and when did that, which is relevant, the confidence aspect of having a degree and you know the opportunity to you know for a certain segment to meet people and you know all the things that come with a with. You know, with growing up, essentially, and having, you know, having just the self-confidence to, you know, to go forward in life. Certainly with your background and the, you know, the interest that you had, you already knew when you got here what your course was of action and what your plan was. But also, I'm sure that you already had, you know, rubbed elbows and had those interactions with horsemen and, you know, to that extent, having been around the game, you know, well in advance of getting here.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I knew at the point, well, if you see me, I'm not jockey size. So as soon as I knew I couldn't ride horses, it was the next option training. And ever since, as early as I can remember, 16, as soon as I got my work, my working papers, started working for Shatino in New York, Falcone, then Zito, and just climbed the ranks fairly quick, but learned from great people. And I feel like that set me up very well. And coming here just rounded it off.
What do you expect? And up till now, what area do you think is the biggest challenge?
I think that the biggest challenge, training-wise, is developing two-year-olds. And in order to be able to show that you could develop them, you need that proper stock, you know? If you're getting cheaper two-year-olds, obviously you're kind of starting off in a hole. But if you have some, even if one of them is talented and you could just show what you could do with that one, I feel you could show exactly like what you could do when you get your hands on something, you know?
Well, and you look at, you know, cause it's interesting between Dominic and Robert Falcone and Nick, you know, Falcone has, I think, in a lot of ways really proven, you know, how what a good trainer he is. And his introduction, I think, on a wide basis, you know, came in association with Mind Your Biscuits. And then there was this presumption that, oh, that he's really a paper trainer. Well, that wasn't the case, number one. But then subsequently, he is shown with all different kinds of horses and particularly with the good work he's done with claimers. And the, you know, I think he is as underappreciated as anybody out there. I just from watching and as a better. I mean, you get a feel for, as a player, you get a feel for who, you know, who is making incremental progress with an acquisition, you know, whether they get the horse, whatever way, claiming or private purchase or, you know, through a horse of racing age sale. And I'm very impressed with what he does.
No, yeah, he's definitely a super talented trainer. I mean, I think he's 35% first off the claim. And he taught me a lot when I was there, but I see he's getting a lot of opportunities now. The Generosios, he gave him a few horses, so he's building up his string. But he's one of the most talented young trainers out there, in my opinion.
Well, he's one of the few guys that came to California a couple of years ago with a small string, 12, 14 horses-ish, and actually did well and made it.
Yeah.
And he didn't leave because of – a lot of people leave because, oh, geez, I can't win out here. He just left because of – it just business didn't make sense. It was, you know, cost a lot of money to split and do what he did. But he impressed me. And, you know, what impresses a guy like me in my position is the questions that they ask when they come in. You know, the right questions, not, you know, not just about where they're going to be stabled and this type of things. So when they come in and ask questions about races, they don't ask stupid questions. And there's a lot of that it filters through. But they come when they're asking for races, they don't ask for a race that we ran 2 days ago. They don't ask, you know, things like that. Was asking very intelligent questions. And you know what? Those are the guys that you want to help. It's like, oh, you know what? You're right. That race is missing. So, you know what? I'll put that in the next book. Things like that. So I was impressed by that, just the way he handled his business and, you know, what happened on the track as well. So one of the few success stories that came to California at the time, we wish he would have stayed, but it just economically it didn't make sense for him, and we got that. But got a little taste, and, you know, he left a little mare behind that became history in California, right? Basilica. So anyway, he got her to the point where she looked good enough to claim her 40, and you know, Jerry jumped on it. But no, he very impressive, and he's going to have a good career ahead of him. And now I know he had Matthew working for him part of the time, so that explains it. But seriously, good people work for good people, and you're going to pick up a lot. And I got a good feeling about the old Matthew here.
Well, yeah, I think the thing that helps me is I learned a lot on, like, each sex. So Zito, I learned how to deal with, like, how his training system was with the bigger horses and the two-year-olds. Obviously, the stock wasn't the same as Warpass and those type of horses. But learning Zito's system and then seeing how Falcone claimed horses and the things he would do to fix them up in order to get them to progress forwardly. And I just feel like it's a well-rounded resume type thing.
No doubt. No doubt. And you'll keep learning. I mean, even Baffert last hour just himself also acknowledged. He said, still learning. I mean, you just it's, you know, it's an ever-changing environment. And you as horse player, whatever arena you're in, you keep learning, or you at least you're open to either new experience or you know, learning from something or taking an element. I mean, as you know, you watch as a racing director, as a racing office executive, you watch what other people are doing and steal from it.
And well, copying is a good thing in this business. You see somebody that does something good that works. I mean, it's no problem. Just you don't patent it. You let other people in on it. And every day, and in this game, I mean, every time you think you've seen it all, something comes along, and so that prepares you. You try to prepare for everything, but you get some of the wackiest stuff. We're dealing with animals. We're dealing with, you know, weather. We're dealing with all kinds of situations. So you try to prepare for everything, and then something else comes along. So just got to be prepared for the next thing that comes. So you're always learning. If you're not, then you're just going to fall behind.
For you, Matthew O'Connor with us, who's going to start his professional training career this winter, based at Palmettos, the physical properties of horses and that element that we talked about quite a bit with Baffert about identifying stock and the kind, you know, of physical properties that you admire in a horse and that you recognize in a horse. Talk about that part of it, because the technical aspects of training, I mean, those are, you know, putting together a training plan and all that stuff is technical. The feel for looking at a young horse and understanding what it's going to grow into, that's a little different. And you can learn the points of the horse, mm-hmm. as they're known. And there's I suppose there are some people who are naturals at it, but my guess is that the vast majority, it comes from experience and knowing, and we're going to talk to Sid Fernando shortly, understanding sire lines and pedigrees and, you know, what properties are being absorbed into a young horse and, you know, where they're going to go. Talk about how you've either developed that side of it or how you plan to do it, because, you know, obviously, you know, in your young, early 20s, it's not going to be something that is just, you know, at your disposal instantly.
Mm-hmm. So when my uncle got in the game in 2006, obviously we were buying yearlings at the time. So I spent a lot of time at the Fazek Tipton sale, specifically Saratoga Select, sure. New York Red Sale. And at the time, Chris Brothers, Xavier International Bloodstock, was buying for us. So I spent time looking at horses since I was 8 years old. Progressing through, we linked up with Jimmy Croupy. So I went around with Croupy a little bit, learned his side of it. And I remember one year in, maybe 2 years ago in the October, that mixed sale that they have in Saratoga.
Yeah.
The fall.
Fall one, sale.
I'd gone through the whole book and I was sitting in the front row with my uncle next to me and Jimmy was behind me. And Jimmy, he goes to me, let me see your book. Let me see if you really know what you're talking about. And he takes my book and he starts matching up his numbers to the hip numbers of it, that he looked at to mine. And he just looked at me and said, oh, you really do know what you're talking about.
You're on the right track.
So that was good. And then obviously Nick Zito's bought some great horses, Stay Thirsty, Core Vision, Horror Pass, you name it. He actually gave me a list of the horses he bought. And the last 2 years, I went to Keeneland 2 years ago, worked wholesale with him. We passed on a couple good horses. But, I learned to be the best, you have to learn from the best. And I feel on the sales side, I've taken aspects of the best buyers in the United States and implemented them into my own kind of plan. And training-wise, too, I've taken little aspects of the people I've worked for and kind of compiled it and have my own system set up, and I feel like it'll be successful.
And it's, again, it's one of those areas that is ever-changing. You see where the introduction of certain stallions and you know, it's constantly morphing, and you have to be open to having a finger on the pulse and having a sense of where things are going and who might be successful next. I mean, there's so many rolling of the dice that goes on. It's a game of risk at every step.
Absolutely. I mean, at this point, obviously I'm hoping Always Dreaming takes off as a sire, but if he doesn't, I'm very high on Gunrunner. Yeah. Being from that St. Liam family, so we'll see what he does. But out of all the quote-unquote new sires out there the last 2 years, I feel Gunrunner has the best chance.
Well, he's certainly getting a good chance, and he'll have got a terrific book of mares. Well, actually, we'll talk to Sid too, and I want Sid to explain how he has seen young people come in, and not so much on the training side. What struck me last year was the first Abel, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Was the first of the students in 5 years of doing these conversations and meeting kids. He was the first one that was interested directly in the bloodstock trade, and it hadn't really occurred to me, that there wasn't necessarily that avenue immediately at the disposal. I mean, certainly it's out there for the kids to pursue, but it I hadn't thought about how does somebody move into that arena.
To tell you, when I went to school here, and I told you I didn't grow up in a racing family or anything like that. I literally came from the grandstand and, went to the program and, did the deal. And I remember sitting around a table. We were last year of a bunch of kids. And, hey, what are you going to do? Hey, I'm going to go here. And one of the kids, I forget who it was, says, I'm going to be a bloodstock agent. And I go, oh, yeah, that's great. And so we got up and I walked over to us and I go, what's a bloodstock agent? I had no idea what that even meant. And it was pretty funny. I mean, that's how green I was. I had no idea. So when I came out of here, you learn all this stuff. But it prepares you for just about anything. It just gives you knowledge, general knowledge of the game. You get to meet people here at the symposium that maybe you never would ever see. And you can develop relationships from the beginning there. And maybe you found someone at one of these symposiums that was a bloodstock agent and learned from him, or the family did it or whatever. But I do laugh at that. And I just remember going,
no idea.
It's a bloodstock agent. What does that mean?
Well, and Sid Fernando standing by. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And uh, I, uh, I'm going to guess that you've heard some of the conversation, whether it was with Bob Baffert earlier and now with Matt O'Connor. It occurred to me that I would ask you, over the years, how have you seen young people get into that side of the business, the whether it's straightforward for farms, whether it's for consigners, whether it's for the sales company? I mean, where do they come from?
You know, with the advent of Twitter, you've seen quite a bit of young people, just because of the publicity. You see people moving, you know, people have come in and they seem to succeed, you know, they get a shot, they're talented, and they shoot up in some ways. If they get into a big establishment, other times you've got people kind of manufacturing their own. You've got, you know, the Darley program has put a ton of young people. Yeah, you know, that's like an Ivy League placement of guys. And then you've got other guys that kind of make their way by, you know, scratching and hustling and get into positions in all areas. I mean, you know, if you look at, say, you know, TVG, for example, there was this that young woman, Candace Hare, was just doing a podcast or something on Twitter. And then got picked, you know, quickly developed a following, and then became a talking head at TVG. I mean, it's just one example I'm noting off the top of my head from Twitter. But around the world, I've seen young people, and it's great, you know, push themselves in, and if they have the talent and a lot of times the opportunity within that, whatever that organization is, they're given that chance. There have been, you know, quite a few people that have, I've noticed, just, you know, risen pretty quickly.
When it comes to pedigree, and you and I have touched on this over the years many times, for me, even though my original interests came from being a player,
and right,
the pedigree side of things and the, you know, the curiosity. It's funny, Baffert said being curious about anything in life will take you in a lot of directions. But when it came to, you know, trying to understand pedigree and its application, because I thought that there was an obvious correlation to understanding it you know, to being a better horse player. But, you know, I started reading everything I get my hands on, and whether it's books like Ed Bowen's books, Matriarchs and Patriarchs and Legacies of the Turf and those books. I've talked about W.H.P. Robertson's book that isn't necessarily pedigree-oriented, but there's tons of it in there. And, you know, a lot of those kinds of histories. And then when you do searches on the Internet, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that is just laying there to be read, and you know, some of it is blind alleys or stuff that has become hackneyed, Sid, and you know what I mean when we talk about you know, dosage and things that have kind of bubbled up as you know, pseudo pedigree science. But it's out there, and you know, you just basically the more you read and the more you try to absorb, the further you go, essentially. And then I think it's a matter of just, you know, reaching out and connecting with, you know, with people in the arena that you're interested in.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about, you want to get into the pedigree sphere of things, it's a little more, which you touched upon, it's a little more rigorous. I mean, you've got to study. I mean, you really have to get it on. You can't just walk in and start talking, because you know, pedigree actually involves quite a bit of knowledge that you need about sire lines, families, and so forth, and it takes time. So, you know, I get this question a lot from people, including Jacob Shepherd, who's just graduating from that program. He'd reached out to me the other day too, you know, about how people can get in. And I think if you're going to try to make a, you know, if you want to make a career out of it, you've got to be good. You've got to know, because when you start talking to people that might hire you, they're pretty learned people. I mean, they've been breeding horses, and you've got to be able to not only answer their questions, but add more to the equation and actually be an advisor, if that's what you're interested in. So in terms of that, I would suggest what you just suggested, which is, you know, study, learn, read, and slowly start to get into it. And, you know, you'll be able to pick things up quickly and hopefully get the right opportunity. And that's the only, you know, there's no magic bullet for that.
I don't know if I've ever specifically asked you, but when did you latch on to an interest, and what were the origins of it, of your interest?
As a teenager growing up in the 70s, and as somebody who was heavily into racing in the 70s, I just became interested in pedigrees. And I don't know if I ever told you this story, but when I was 16, I just decided that I wanted to discuss some pedigrees with Leon Rasmussen, and I sent him a letter, and I was 16, and much to my surprise, he responded. And from then onwards, he and I entered into a long letter-writing relationship about pedigree. And, you know, and then he and I became really good friends. And, you know, obviously he was, I joined the forum and after he left, and he and I ended up having a incredible personal friendship. And, you know, and so, like, when I was in my 30s, for example, he was in his 70s, but the age didn't matter for us. He was just such a great guy. I'd go out to visit him in Los Feliz, where he lived quite frequently, or Los Feliz, as he used to say. And, yeah, I mean, that's basically how I had an interest, but that was one of my, you know, for a 16-year-old kid to be hearing from Leon Rasmussen is just phenomenal. And so what I liked about our relationship was that, you know, he treated me as an equal. And obviously, you know, that's flattering to me because he felt I had something to say. But, you know, I spent a lot of time studying pedigrees when I was young. And as you pointed out, you continue to learn. I mean, to this day, I continue to study pedigree, you know. So it's something that as you continue to do it, you start to build your own encyclopedia, your own personal trove of knowledge, where many times you're able to, addressing something you pointed out earlier before I came on, you know, address a pedigree with a physique, address pedigrees with certain characteristics in horses that are always helpful in your professional endeavors if you are actually in a position to plan matings or advise other clients, if that's the business part of it that you want to go into. And as you know, that's what I do. So one of the things that you're going to face is that client is going to be asking you questions. He's going to want to know. He's the guy involved. He's the breeder. And he's the guy that's hiring you. And he has a lot of knowledge to begin with. Of course, there are people that come in that aren't as knowledgeable that will pick the game up. But that very highly intelligent, experienced breeder is going to put you on the spot. And you're going to have to, you know, make a case for what you feel if you want to influence something, or if you have a strong feel about something, in the pedigree.
Because Steve Haskin has talked about it, and I know you overlapped with Steve, but was Charlie Hatton still there and alive when you started?
No. No,
he was gone.
He was there much earlier because he was he was a librarian, you know.
Yes.
He was a librarian before he became a writer. In fact, Steve only became a writer after I was there. People don't remember that. He was a librarian who did writing for other publications on the
side. Right.
But not for the Daily Racing Form.
I know.
You know, yeah. It's interesting about that, yeah.
Well, and he has his story is similar too, because he had an interest. He loved the races, but he got interested and had the same kind of origin too, and then got he spent about 10 minutes as a stockbroker and in training, and then Graustark. An interest in Graustark's career got him a job in the library. That's how he ended up latching on too. I've said this before. There's so many avenues to entree, into the game. And what's funny, Sid, that there's this trope out there about nepotism in the game, and it's kind of funny. I mean, I certainly know people who have been born into it or had, had family ties, but I know way more people like you, like me, that came from, that have no ties whatsoever. Just kind of came to it because it was interesting to us and we enjoyed it as, of a curiosity.
That's true. I mean, I was just thinking about it. When I was growing up and really developed a huge interest in racing in the 70s, it really stemmed from my interest in baseball because, of course, you get the sports section, you start reading the box scores, and back then they published the charts in the regular paper. So then you start reading it, you flip through, you're reading the baseball chart, and you flip through and you start reading the racing charts and the racing coverage. They had the articles and whatnot. So it's interesting because they don't have that in papers anymore. They still have the baseball box scores, but they don't have those racing charts. And they were extremely interesting for me. And, it definitely spurred my interest in following it more than just a fan of, some of the racing. Secretariat came on the scene in 72, and then 73 was all over the, media and TV. But it was really the horse that ran fourth to him in the Derby that hit the rail, and his big hulking horse that piqued my interest turned out to be Forgo, who became the horse that I became really interested in, and led me to start to look into his pedigree. Found out that it was by an Argentine import for Lee, and just one thing leads to the other, but there was access to that. And so while baseball was and football were primary things, racing quickly developed for me at that time. And like I said, by the time I was 16, I had become pretty well versed in pedigree research, which emboldened me to write to Leon. And Leon Rasmussen, by the way, had he typed everything, and he had a really unique typewriter that typed everything in capital. So every time he sent the, every time I got a mail, every time I was looking, the first thing I looked was to see if it was a envelope with all caps that anyone was from Leon right away. You know?
Do you have some of those letters?
I think I still have some.
You must. You must.
And I've got, I've got to, you know, a bunch of my Leon Rasmus and stuff, I hate to say this, got demolished in a flooding of my basement.
Ugh, the worst.
I really wanted to some of that because a lot of that stuff came when Leon, just before he was going to die, he called me over because he knew he was dying. He said, listen, is it okay if I send a lot of my personal correspondence to you because you're the only one who would appreciate it? And so I went into Leon's office and he had like 10 boxes already set up with my name on it. I said, well, Leon, whether I want it or not, I see they're coming my way. And he did send them. And I lost. A few years ago, our basement got, during Sandy, everything got flooded. And I lost all of that, which, you know, I hate to say I might have had my own correspondence there with Leon as well. But the relationship I had with Leon, and this is a good tale for anybody nowadays, is, you know, you get to know somebody that's in that business and you develop a personal and professional relationship. It can be extremely rewarding because my relationship with Leon was, you know, one of the most rewarding relationships I've had in my life. So much so that, Steve, when my sons were young, my entire family, Cynthia, myself, two boys, we take trips to visit Leon at his house and have lunch with Leon and his wife, Erna. And, it transcended racing and it just became a really great a personal relationship.
Sure. Sure. And that's that's the best kind of mentorship. There's no doubt.
Exactly.
Let me spend a couple of minutes, too, Sid, and fold in particularly the juvenile weekend action. I was at LaSalle, and, you know, certainly Bast winning the Starlet, the Grade 1, and Thousand Words, the Grade 2, and the Futurity, an Uncle Mo and a Pioneer of the Nile, and even Lake Avenue winning the Demoiselle. The Tappet daughter, but I thought that the results in Maryland need to be noted, and also Shotsky's performance as a Blame son. Nice for Blame to get a juvenile like this early, and feels like something's happening with Golden Lad. And I don't know if you heard Brittany Russell on Monday. We didn't talk to you, but we talked to Jerry O'Dwyer, but they were on their way to Timonium. Brittany talked about Golden Lad and how impressed she is, and it feels like that getting two juvenile winners in the Maryland Futurities, that somebody should take notice. The Golden Lad, Brittany basically said that she feels that he's red hot and coming in, under the radar.
Well, he was under my radar too, which is what I can say. But frequently, you know, you get horses. I mean, he's bi-medaglia di oro. You get those type of horses that we've seen come out of Maryland, the Phipps horses that used to be retired to Northview. From the provinces, you're liable to get any type of, by provinces, I mean outside of Kentucky.
Sure.
You're liable to get any type of horse that has that type, you know, great pedigree and some race record to it. Golden Lad was a G3 winner, but he's a son of Medaglia d'Oro, and he's out of Seeking the Gold Mare. Has the potential to be any kind. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that Polish numbers, the Brood Bear sire of California Chrome, what was his name? The Mr. Prospector horse. Another Prince horse who, big Maryland stallion. I'm just looking more up here.
No, I'm drawing. I'm drawing a blank.
You know, the big, not for love.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you get these type of horses. We should keep an eye out for stallions like that because there's a lot of parity in the game right now too. You know, it's not necessarily just. And we've talked about this on your show. It's not just the, it's not a monopoly of big sires. Any of these horses have a shot to break through and perhaps become another horse that comes to Kentucky, like a Cantharos, a Congrats, who came, before them from Florida, Sovereign Dancer. And these are all well-bred horses that have the right to produce and, if they do, it's good to pick them up early.
And what's interesting about the Medaglia d'Oro side of things, when it comes to his, his produce, I think first and foremost, he continues to be thought of, as a top producer of daughters. More than sons, and it's still early in terms of sons of sons. I'm trying to think of who else is out there.
This year he had Fast Anna, but of course Hillendale is Violence, who's a legit stallion, young
right.
stallion, and Fast Anna at Three Chimneys really has put on quite a showing. He started off, I think, for $7,500. He's had one of his first sons was sent. He started off gangbusters and then ended up going to Korea. And that was Warrior's Reward. He's got quite a few horses coming up.
Bolt d'Oro.
He's had a couple of reverse shuttlers, Vancouver, and another one at Darley. He's got a few sons coming up, but. The females have dominated, but it only takes a few of these sons to keep it going. And Bolt d'Oro is, he's an extremely exciting horse.
And who did I just see this morning? Actually, when I was just kind of thumbing through. Thumbing through stories and headlines, what prominent mayor said was being sent to Bolt d'Oro when the season starts? There was just a headline yesterday.
Was big mayor?
Yeah, well, it might have been. Was it Beholder? Beholder, Matt? Huh? Right?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
I think it was Beholder. I saw it this morning, early morning when I was kind of just. Going through trades and catching up on stuff, and it sort of took me aback a little bit that they would go to Boltoro at this juncture, Sid, right? And yeah. This will be his third. That it would be his third season.
Yeah, that's a big endorsement, huh?
Right. That caught my eye. That's why I was. It's funny that we ended up talking about this.
Yeah.
Well, there you
that's
go.
Quite big. Mm-hmm.
How about Shotsky for Blame, the Remsen result?
Yeah, that's really good. And hopefully, Blame had a good 2-year-old the year before last, owned by Claiborne and Mrs. Bill Schneider. Once again, my memory fails me. Bill Mott trained him. It was really considered highly on the classic trail. And he ended up not quite panning out. So a good 2-year-old colt for Blame is exactly what he could use. I mean, Blame had a great year last year, career year. And, he'd taken a drop in stud fee radically from either 25 or 30 all the way down to 12.5. And then he had that big year and he's back up again. So, his career is on the right trajectory, and he's the type of horse that we still may not have seen the best of yet. Because go ahead.
I was going to say he also his early success has been with fillies.
Yeah, and he had several colts that got hurt, from his first crop. And, again, it's just that difference, what could have happened early that could have changed the trajectory. But to his credit, he's earned it the hard way, come back again from what looked like a big drop off. And, he's getting a much better quality of mare. He started off getting great mares. He's back to 35,000 again, and it's just a matter of him continuing the success that he's had over. People forget. I mean, this is a horse that I'm talking about. Blame. This is a horse that got a French Oaks winner, Senga.
That's right.
He ended up dying, but. That's a massive achievement for an American-based stallion, because there haven't been many American-based stallions in recent years that have had a European Classic winner. And, as Bernie told me at the time, these guys here really just kind of went over their head. And he never got a big lift off. He had that horse far from over, that's from his first crop, that's what I was talking to you about, looked real promising, he was a Withers winner. He got hurt, and, that could have been a big game changer for him early on. So he came in, he had 6 stakes winners in his first crop, and usually what happens is, we've talked about, they kind of drop over the second and third crop, but his fourth crop yielded 10 stakes winners. And that's when he had that big rise again, which helped to bring his stud fee back up to what it is right now from 12.5.
Well, this year already, there's Shotsky winning the Remsen. He also had the filly that was third. Blame Debbie was third in the Demoiselle, Alondra, who did not run well, and I'm sure, was disappointed, because he certainly last week when we talked to him going in, he was really sky high on her chances. But Alondra, it was third in the Alcibiades, so grade one placed. And there's also the Keneally filly, Abscond.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
He's got four, there's right there. There's four, graded stake winners and graded stake placed runners. She won that stake up at Woodbine
right.
fall. So, I kind of root for Blame. I, I, uh,
I did too. And from a pedigree part of it, a seed, you know, he's that rare Roberto line stallion still at the forefront of this country. And for the sake of, you know, diversity and so forth, it's important. You know, he's by Arch. If you look around, you know, it's tough to find him because, you know, Dinah Former has died, and he's only got a few sons that are operating, and just one or two on their way up. So, you know, this is an important preservation of a very important bloodline, and that's why, that's one reason why I always particularly enjoy Blaine's success as well.
I should also mention that out of the Remsen, that late run that Ajaweed put in for Kieran McLaughlin and for Shadwell, this is a Curlin out of a Daher mare, and felt like he's a horse that, you know, when they circle back around next March, April, back to mile and an eighth and beyond, that he's a serious horse. Kieran, you know, delighted with that run. And it's funny because Jerry O'Dwyer absolutely acknowledged that, you know, the wire came up in time for Shotsky as it turned up. But he, you know, he also had run, you know, every step, to win. And Saez had, you know, had pretty much gotten him there. But I thought Ajadwi, you know, a good sign for Curlin, who had his nice run of classic placements stopped. Yeah, exactly. This year.
Yeah.
So he'll get
finally,
you know,
stopped this year, right? Yeah, that's right. He'd had one every year until this year.
Exactly. Yeah. And Sid, finally, too, for Gary West and Ben Glass and the team, Maximum Security's performance, just a real exclamation point on a remarkable year for any 3-year-old. He's got people that seem to root against him irrationally, all he does is go out and he runs. It's funny, he runs every race kind of the same. It doesn't matter what distance, if he's going two turns, right? He takes control and he can rate, he can gut them, he turns horses back, and then he finishes at whatever configuration he's running. And I did see some people who grudgingly, this it seems, admitted, you know, this is a really good horse, and some of the knockers kind of acknowledged that you know, he has earned himself the 3-year-old championship.
Yeah, that's really a good point. And one adjunct to that I might add is I was talking to Gary West on Sunday as he was headed back. And I said, you know, Gary, off the top of my head, I can't recall another owner, if Maximum Security does end up winning the 3-year-old Eclipse Award. I said, I cannot think off the top of my head of another owner that would have won 3 consecutive Eclipse Awards with 3 consecutive 3 different runners, 2017 3-year-old championship with West Coast, 2018 2-year-old championship with Game Winner, and then if he wins this year, Maximum Security, 2019 3-year-old championship with Maximum Security. That's one heck of an achievement.
It's true. And you know, Baffert here earlier, and we didn't get into that conversation. We talked more about his origins here at University of Arizona, and then, you know, growing up in Nogales, south of here. But Baffert racking up that kind of, you know, those kinds of plaudits when it came to, you know, West Coast and Arrogate and Justify, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. As a trainer, Baffert's done it. No question.
Right. But as an owner, that's a great point.
Yeah. As an owner, I can't think of an owner winning 3 consecutive Eclipse Awards with 3 different horses. which is kind of phenomenal. If that ends up being, if Maxine Security wins, of course, and if that ends up being the case.
If he doesn't win, there should be an investigation at this point. I mean, come on.
As long as Attorney General Barr is not heading it, I'll
touche. Well put. I love it. Good job. Sid, this was tremendous. I appreciate it. And I appreciate the insights toward young people. And not even, they don't have to be young. They can be any age to get involved in the game coming in on the bloodstock side.
Yeah, absolutely. Great talking, Steve. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Sid Fernando, everybody. Work Thoroughbred Consultants. We'll take a break here. Top of the hour, Matt O'Connor as well. Congratulations on graduating here, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Florida.
Thank you, appreciate it.
What's the barn colors? What's your tack?
Red, navy, blue, and white.
Red, navy, blue, and white.
Yep. We have website up, mboconnorracing.com.
Look at you. Let's give everybody the hold on. Let's give everybody all that information. Go ahead. Say it again.
It's mboconnorracing.com.
Nice. We'll pull up the website. And then for those that, in terms of following you on Twitter, it's also MBO
Connor
Racing. That's smart. And looking forward to getting saddled in that first winner.
Absolutely.
And it'll come soon.
Appreciate you having me on.
Not at all, Matt. A pleasure. Let's take a break. We'll come right back. Hammer going to sit in. We've got, I think, a visit coming up with Joe Longo. And Michael Dickinson disappeared. I was going to sit Dickinson down because I wanted to kind of fill out the second half of some of the things that we discussed yesterday in our session. But Baffert and Pletcher are holding everybody captivated in the big room. Back to Tucson. We've only got about 45 minutes left. It's unbelievable. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sun on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
I love this. Santa, teach me to dance. You can't. You're not wearing the. You're not wearing the headset, so you can't hear this.
I know that one, so I'm hearing it
all
in my head.
There you go. Good job. Good job. Thanks to Sid. I appreciate it.
So it looks like you said, somebody pulled a fire alarm, and
it's Pletcher and Baffert.
Yeah.
They're just doing as the fascinated.
Thing.
Exactly.
No,
just,
but it's great. It's a good thing for them to show up, and it's funny. I just got a call from Gary Young, and we're talking quickly about the Belichick film situation. Mm-hmm. That basically, you had to, are things that bad that you got to film the Bengals, but they're 1-12. To pick up a few things, at least save that for, you know, when you're playing the Ravens or something like that. But we were cracking up about that. So Patriot land, Uncle Tom's not playing as well as maybe anticipated.
There's a little
panic going on there.
Yes, there is.
There's not too many tears flowing around either.
No, hard to
in the Boston area. So
hard to motivate much sympathy on that front. My suggestion is with all these Patriot fans having grown up in the Hartford area, and our family, my father's company, First Hartford had season tickets at Schaefer Stadium, and just by the fact that I'm saying Schaefer Stadium gives you an idea of how far back. And
the little guy on the helmet hiking the ball,
absolutely. And my quiz for any Patriot fan: oh, I'm a Patriot fan, really? Okay, you know who Steve Grogan was? You ever go to Geno's? If they don't know what Geno's is, they're not a Patriot fan. And I don't want to hear, oh, I've been following the Patriots forever.
Sure, Sam Cunningham.
Sure you have.
I mean, that's even.
Sam Bam is fabulous.
Legend.
That's a great one. But
why has there not been another Sam Cunningham in the fact how he used to jump over the pile? You just don't see that anymore. Right,
and who there was a Steeler you had that did that. That was a leaper over.
Not in the Cunningham fashion.
Sam Bam.
And of course, I grew up in Southern California watching him play at USC, and we went to many games there. So he was, you know, Sam the Bam was good. The Patriots weren't quite in that. They weren't as hated or.
Oh no, they were. They well, they were just. They were just. They were
one
just,
of those teams you felt sorry for, like the Buffalo Bills.
They were just a franchise. Well, the Bills had their share of success.
They did with Jack Kemp and all that.
No doubt.
Good to see the Bills coming back into action. And so we'll see what they're made of coming up on Sunday night, which they just flexed that game.
Oh, is that right?
To late the Bills Steeler game, which. Ooh. 3-4 weeks ago looked like a ho-hummer, and now
suddenly
it's got a little wild card aspiration for the 8-5 Steelers, which is unbelievable.
Well, you know, a quick aside, I guess we touched on it. Did we touch on it yesterday? I can't even remember. We talked about the taco tour, but we didn't talk about the EAGLES Eagles,
fine.
Do you remember when I said to you at one point, I said they just made it 17-10, and when they scored that touchdown, that's when I waved my phone at you and I said, they're coming in the right direction. That was okay.
Well, needless to say, the places that we went for to enjoy our Mexican taco burrito tour didn't have television.
No.
So Steve was phoning it there. We were watching every other play on the phone, and would have been very rough. A bit of a rough evening had the Eli Manning led Giants beat the Eagles. So the Eagles are in control of the division now.
Well, just win out. They just got to win. They got no personnel. I mean, everybody's banged. But still, it was a fun. I did not fall asleep for quite a while. Actually, that's the one rub on those night games that. You end up. It's not like you just immediately lay down and go to sleep.
Well, not when your team's playing, you're pumped
no,
up, and
exactly.
They win at the buzzer in overtime.
Exactly right. Heading back this afternoon. I can't stay, but in fact, let me try now. We didn't get to Pete in that first hour like we were supposed to, and I thought he said that he was only available till 10. But let me go back and check. Yeah, 9 to 10. And where's Marshall and
J.K. walked by here a little bit. I'm not sure, but we had a little discussion. We had a good discussion, Marshall and J.K. and Pat and I last night. So it's going to be very conversational as well. It's great when these guys know each other, and we're picking on a few topics we're going to talk about. We're not going to go too deep with the horse player deal. I mean, takeout is obviously one of the subjects, but we can just go. It's like LASIK. So you go around in circles and nothing's going to get done. And we're going to try and pick on a few topics out there that, that can be done and should be done. And just make it more aware. So it's over and over and over that these are the people that put food on the table for everybody at this convention. Whether they're selling HHRTV machines over here or Amtote over here or you and I sitting here talking on the radio, they're the horse players. What fuels the engine? So we're just trying to get it across to some of the tracks that these people need to be more involved and need to be consulted on things. And if you make it more interesting for them and more interesting for the average player, they're going to bet more and things are going to roll along a little bit better. And I know, I've seen it myself. There were many tracks, as you said, have gone the extra step in Santa Anita when, we created the Eddie Logan Room there, and Santa Anita's become the contest place of the world. I mean, at least in the country here, because of the way we treated the fan.
Yeah, exactly.
The better. I mean, they're very comfortable. They have their own area. There's areas they can get a cocktail if they want, and they get a burger if they want. It's just a friendly situation, and I know other tracks have followed suit in that way, which is good, and that's a start. But to not include them when they're putting their application into the commission, which includes, I mean, you have to put everything in there, including the betting menu, $2 win, place, and show, and trifectas, and there's some other bets out there that we're going to talk about this afternoon, with everything being a 50-cent minimum, of course. It's great. It includes everybody. But, there's a bet out there with a little bit higher minimum, $5,
well, that's something.
Things like that.
Both
that we
Jonathan and, yeah, Jonathan has talked about it. Paul Matisse, who, is consulting the Breeders' Cup and trying to incorporate some of those conditional bets and the head-to-head concepts and some of the original, the original concepts that could enhance the betting menu. They're trying to come up with some original thoughts.
Ideas and to get some tracks to take a shot. And what's great about these guys, you mentioned Paul and Duke and Jonathan and these guys. I mean, yeah, they play at a different level than you and I do, but they're so willing to share their knowledge. They're so willing to share their knowledge with others, not just on their level. They want the $2 better. They want to teach it, and not only do we want to get new people, but we want to maintain the guys we have. And someone just sat down here who I spoke about earlier this morning.
This morning, yeah, perfect timing.
I don't know what you did. We're going to find out. Put the microphone on. Put that headset on. Anyway, Gregory Peck. I told you yesterday. One of the kind of, if you want to call it, non-racing titles that are here. I went in to sit through Mr. Peck's media class. I want to call it a class because what he did there, and I was telling Steve early in the audience earlier that I looked around the room and I didn't see too many track operators in there, people that I was hoping were going to be in there. But he put on some mock interviews and tried to tell people and teach us how to react to the press when you're being interviewed, and you know, down to posture and looking in the eye, and maybe how to deflect a question, how to attack a question that was meant to, you know, to get out of a negative response for you. So, I mean, here, Greg just sat down here, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about, you know, your experience of that, but this is what he does for a living, and I know I walked away with a few little tidbits. Look at, I've got your little thing right here. State, support, illustrate,
and restate.
So here he is right here, unscripted. But, I mean, you can maybe give a few tidbits of what you do and what you did yesterday.